The Connecticut Office of the Inspector General released a report determining detention staff were not at fault for the in-custody death of a Hartford woman last year. This news broke earlier this month, and a lot of times when you hear Inspector General's office, a lot of people wonder, well, how exactly does that job work? You hear about officer-involved shootings, for example, and you hear whether or not that officer is cleared or not based on the Office of the Inspector General. So we thought this was a great opportunity when you hear, again, this most recent example out of Hartford to learn more about the Office of the Inspector General. Joining us today is James Viadero, who is the chief inspector for that office. And James, welcome to the show. Let's start by talking about sort of the tier of work that happens in the inspector general's office and the amount of people who get involved with these type of high profile cases.
Melissa, good morning. Thank you. Basically, you know, we're a newly founded office approximately 3 years ago as a result of the police accountability bill. In our office, there's eight inspectors besides myself, paralegal, Judge Devlin, who is the inspector general, appointed. I was appointed to that position in 2022, and we started our role in that office. Statutorily, our role is to investigate any officer's use of deadly physical force, whether it results in a death or not of an individual. Any in-custody death, police in-custody death, or any in-custody death, regardless of the circumstances involving the Department of Corrections.
And interestingly enough, James, which the timing of having you on was great, because in literally just the last week, we've had a couple of reports where, again, you hear Inspector General, that name gets dropped. In Waterbury, there was an officer involved shooting as well in a ruling that came out from the Inspector General's office. You had said this was sort of a newly appointed office, if you will, only a few years old. And I would argue a lot of police at the municipal and state level have said it's one of the, I'd say, shining stars that came out of the police accountability law. Talk a little bit about the work that has gotten done since the formation of this team.
Yeah, well, it was a rough start at first. Like I said, initially, any type of incidents that I described before were investigated by a state's attorney in one of the 13 judicial districts as appointed by the chief state's attorney. So as a result of this bill, I think what the legislator tried to accomplish was basically continuity and, you know, and how these things were investigated. We work hand in hand with the state PD on these investigations. So when we initially took office, you know, it was putting a new office together of investigators and starting a new process. And I think that one of the first things that we did was we felt that there had to be a community outreach. So throughout the state, we went out, we met with different community groups in different municipalities and towns, had public forums with them, just like the one we had in Bridgeport, where you attended several months ago. Secondly, we thought, you know, as a result of the bill, there was a lot of questions from law enforcement, the law enforcement hierarchy, and the police officers themselves. So over the past 3 years, we've visited every police department. We've met with every union that represents law enforcement. And we have an ongoing process where we do training for law enforcement officers in Connecticut, what to expect from this bill, what to expect if we have to come in and do an investigation within their agency. I think up to date, we've probably trained about 4,000 officers in Connecticut.
Wow.
And you know, we continually do outreach to the community. I think, you know, what's real important is, you know, I think this bill was put into place to illustrate transparency in how these investigations are conducted. And you can see that, like, when there's an incident within 96 hours, there's a portion of the body cam video that is involved in a case, and there's a preliminary report from the Inspector General's office on what the incident entailed. So, you know, as far as the communities and public that these incidents involve, you know, it's important to let them know what we do, who we are, and how we go about our investigations.
And again, we have James Viadero here. And James, I'm so glad you brought up the forum. That is where we met in person for the first time, the chief inspector for the Office of the Inspector General. And what I loved about being at that forum was I got a better understanding, and so did the community members who were there in Bridgeport, got an understanding of how the Inspector General's office really breaks down a case and really tries to determine if something is questionable, is justified, is not justified, so on and so forth. And so it's kind of hard in this, I'd say, regard. You know, we've only got a few minutes on the air. But give people a sense and understanding, what are some of the things that you look at, that the office looks at, to determine if an officer-involved shooting, for example, is justified or not?
Yeah, I mean, the state statute is pretty explicit as far as a police officer's use of deadly physical force. And, you know, as a result of the Police Accountability Bill in 2020, there was a number of changes that were made to the statute that added different elements where an officer has to demonstrate, you know, that they feel deadly physical force is warranted. You know, and accompanying that was a policy change by the Police Officers Standard and Training Council and training that went into effect. So, you know, when these things are looked at, you're looking at what the statute is, the officer in compliance with the statute, was the use of force justified at the end of the investigation, or was it not justified? And, you know, we're finding, you know, in a vast majority of these cases, a police officer's actions were justified. But also accompanying these reports, there's other findings in there. You know, are there any tactical issues that an officer could have done something differently? There's recommendations. There's things that we're finding that are commonalities in a lot of these investigations. You know, over the course of the last 3 years, there's a lot of data that's been collected. And one of the things that we're going to be doing in the upcoming year is we've consulted with a scholar out in the field who's going to do a study on the last 3 years of data, you know, to find out, hey, what are some of the elements that are involved in these cases and what are some of the commonalities, and then use that information to share it with police departments, you know, to help them do their job better, if that's the case.
And what's amazing, too, is when you look at the body, the people who make up the Inspector General's office, these are all people with pretty lengthy law enforcement experience, right, James?
Yeah, correct. You know, the inspectors that we have, the majority of them are all retired officers. They all applied for the position as a state inspector. The majority of them and all of them have an extensive experience in doing complex investigations, you know, coming from various towns. We have individuals from Stanford PD, Waterbury PD, Bridgeport PD, New Haven PD. And, you know, in their past investigative experience, you know, really, really was doing complex cases. So they're very, very accomplished investigators.
James Viadero is here, Chief Inspector for the Office of the Inspector General, and we're talking about how the office will take certain cases, how they determine if a shooting, for example, is justified or not, if something is questionable or not. And something I always found really interesting, James, is the fact that a lot of times body camera footage or dash cam footage will be released before the Inspector General has even come out with a report. And I know that's, I don't know if that's out of your office necessarily. It's probably at the municipality level if they decide to release that. But what are your thoughts on that, and why release that to the public before the Inspector General makes a decision?
Yeah, actually, Melissa, the release of information is our responsibility. One of the statutory changes was that within 96 hours of one of these incidents, our office has to come out with a preliminary report of what the incident entailed, and we have to release a portion of body-worn camera video or any other type of appropriate video that best depicts the incident itself. So it's basically built into the statute. We work hand-in-hand with the municipality or the town where the incident occurred, and, you know, we assume the investigation and control the release of that information. You know, one of the main reasons for that is, you know, transparency's sake. Prior to our office taking effect in as a result of the accountability bill, you know, the release of information, basically an incident would occur and there'd be some press releases on what the incident involved and who was the state's attorney that was investigating it. But there really wasn't any statutory requirement to release any of the video or any really detailed information until the investigation was completed. And in some instances, that could take up to a year, year and a half, sometimes 2 years. So, you know, as a result of this bill, you know, you get information out there relatively soon after the occurrence of an incident. You know, you want to get accurate information. You know, 96 hours is really, really not a lot of time when you're doing one of these investigations.
Right.
But, you know, we think it's important that, you know, at a certain point, within that 96 hours, we kind of know what some of the facts are. We don't have the complete findings. We don't have the investigation completed as far as forensics and other testing that we have to do. But, you know, the body cam videos pretty much depict exactly what happened. And, you know, that narrative goes out there. So, you know, in a community that has one of these events, you know, it's important for the individuals in that community and the people involved to kind of see and make a judgment for themselves. Hey, what exactly happened? And then the full investigation is still ongoing, and a final report, you know, will come out usually within a year after the event.
It's, I guess the thing that is, and look, James, as a reporter, I can tell you I love that we get access to the footage sooner rather than later, certainly. And I think as a resident of Connecticut, sure, I mean, transparency, absolutely. But the one thing I think I've learned in all the years that I've spoken to law enforcement is the fact that you can't rush an investigation, especially when people's lives are at stake, family members, all that. Mm-hmm. And I think that what's always surprising to me is, you know, it's not like you're sending video of what led up to it, or hey, this is the aftermath. I mean, you're sending the instant of when a gunshot was fired or when a car was smashed into. I mean, it is the footage of that moment, which I always find very surprising. Yeah. that is released before an investigation is wrapped up. I think that's what's surprising me. I can understand getting some footage out there to say, hey, listen, here's what led up to what is in question now, or hey, here was the aftermath of it. But this is the moment that a lot of times is, yep, being sent out to the general public before we even know how the investigation wraps up. I always find that very interesting, to be honest.
Yeah, correct. I mean, I think, you know, you're working in the media, you know. I mean, the narrative, once a narrative gets out there, and if it's a false narrative or you don't have accurate information, that becomes the narrative for the incident. So it's important to get accurate information out there. Mm. You know, one thing I'd like to talk about, Melissa, is, like, you know, before that information is released in 96 hours, you know, there's also a statutory requirement that the officer involved has the ability to watch that video first within the first 48 hours. And, you know, before that's also released. And, you know, we work hand in hand with the agency and the officers that were involved through their representatives and the families of incidents that involve people from the public. So they, before it goes out to the media, we give them the opportunity to see what we're putting out and what the release is. You know, we know, you know, these incidents are traumatic incidents on both sides of the on both sides of the incident. And, you know, the first place we don't want somebody to see that video, whether it's the officer or the family of people that are involved, is in the media. So we provide that information with them also in that 96 hours.
James Viadero, again, the Chief Inspector for the Office of the Inspector General. I want to thank you for the work that you do professionally, certainly in the office, but also for explaining so much here on WACC. And I look forward to speaking again.
Thank you, Melissa. Take care. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.